Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
The 2014 Sundance Film Festival will be taking place from January 16th through January 26th in Park City, Salt Lake City, Ogden, and at the Sundance Resort. Individual tickets are now available to Utah locals. Visit sundance.org/festival/locals.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we have something for all of the whiskey lovers out there. We're going to talk to the proprietors of the new Sugar House Distillery, as well as the owner of the new Whiskey Street Bar in downtown Salt Lake City. We are happy to have James Fowler and Dan Feldman, two of the folks behind the new Sugar House Distillery that is opening up in January, I do believe. First of all, thank you guys for coming in. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Awesome to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Dan, for having us.
And so so we can break this down correctly, James, you're the owner of the place.
Yes.
Dan, you are the head distiller of the place.
I think official title is lead distiller.
Lead distiller
it's
of the place.
It's one letter difference, but sometimes it makes a world of difference.
Yeah, right. I'm sure there's a lot of technicalities among distillery hierarchy in there. And am I right, James? Are we talking January? We're opening this month as this podcast pops out to the world.
Absolutely. We're legal January 1st with the state of Utah. That was by far the hardest license to get. We've had our license with the federal government since September.
Oh,
so
okay.
January 1st, we're legal with the state of Utah.
What does that mean for those of us who love our spirits? The fact that you're open, does that mean we can walk in and there'll be stuff? Or does it mean you get to start distilling in Sugar House?
We can start distilling, which we're going to do a vodka, and a vodka doesn't have to be aged. And so it will come off the still pretty quick.
Okay.
But we still have to do some bottling, labeling, that process. So it'll take a couple weeks. It could hit into February till we actually start selling at the location.
Hopefully not. And in terms of the selling it, I mean, is this something people will be able to buy at your place there on 22nd and West Temple-ish area? Down there, right?
Yes, we're gonna
and
have
liquor stores.
We are going to have a package agency. We were approved for that, so we will be able to sell our products at our location in
Beautiful.
The bottle.
Well, why don't we let's start at the beginning here. Before you two got together, James, tell us just a little bit about the why. Why do you want to start a distillery, and why do you think it can work in Utah of all places?
I've been home brewing for about 20 years, and I've always loved brewing beer. And it was about 5 or 6 years ago I went to my first distillery, and I saw that if you could make a good beer, you could make a good whiskey. You know, the wheels just started turning in my head, and the more and more I went to these distilleries, I just started falling in love with the still, just kind of the magic of the whole thing, and decided that's definitely what I wanted to do. And it's literally taken a good 5 or 6 years to get this up and going.
And then how does Dan come into the picture in terms of opening Sugar House Distillery? And
Dan, it was kind of a unique situation. I was planning on doing kind of the lead distilling position. And Dan contacted me, and we thought he'd be a great fit to come in and kind of be part of the team. So we're excited to have him.
And Dan, you've been working in North Carolina doing distilling, right?
Yeah, I was working for a small brewery in North Carolina called Mother Earth Brewing. And I was there originally as a production manager, and I've been brewing for a long time. I've been professionally brewing for about the same time that James has been doing home brewing,
okay.
So we have that background in common. The owner of Mother Earth just came to me one day and says, yeah, I bought a still, and I like to set it up. You know anything about that? And I said, yeah, I did a little bit of that when I lived in Japan. And I lived in Japan in the early part of the century, and where I learned to make shochu, and among other things. I told him that, and he said, great, we're going to buy a still, and we're going to set you up, and you're going to be a head distiller. And I literally built that distillery from the ground up.
Okay.
They bought the still, but I installed all of the infrastructure, was the general on the room, and then I developed all of the products.
Yeah, what kind of stuff did you make out there?
Main products were whiskey, an all malt whiskey. We were working on a gin that we never got off the ground, but lots of work behind the gin. Grappa was one of the things they really wanted to do, so I did a lot of research in grappa, and also rum.
And James, did you have kind of a vision for, you know, the kind of things you would like to make, you know, as you were sort of, this thing was going from idea to actual reality? Did you know, I want to do a vodka, I want to do a whiskey, or is it sort of, you want to do everything and you're starting with a couple of things?
Well, being in Utah, I do want to go down the list and kind of do all the products, just being that we have the package agency store.
Right.
But there's neat products from Utah that I think that we can complete all the different products. Gin, you know, we have different juniper here that I want to experiment with.
Yeah, we were talking about that one, the drive down here.
Yeah.
We were talking about, hey, there's juniper. Let's go pick
grab some of that.
Let's harvest some.
And actually, blue agave, they import quite a bit of that into the pharmaceutical for weight loss. And so there's a good connection here coming out of Mexico. And so we'd like to, we can't call it a tequila, but definitely want to get into that. And then rum, you know, we got some great byproducts to make rum too. So, and then obviously the whiskey, you know, we have great corn and barley and wheat here. So excited to get going on that.
And you know, it's fun to think about brandies too, because as we were driving through, we saw so many things with, you know, fruit trees and stuff, and Utah Valley is great for growing fruit.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if it becomes a seasonal brandy or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The bottom line is the still that James bought is this fantastic still that's called a hybrid still. And it allows us to do lots of different spirits on the same still. So it's not great for vodka. We can do vodka on it, but it's not like the world's best vodka still that they claim to have up in Grand Teton.
Oh, yeah.
But it is really good for everything. So if we want to do eau de vie or grappa or brandy or
akavit, like
or whatever we want, we can do that. And because we've got small batch sizes, all it means is we have to apply for a form and a label from the TTB, and then we can make it. And we don't even have to necessarily apply to anybody else to be able to sell it in the package store, which gives us a chance to really bring some cool stuff to the Utah market.
You can experiment and play with stuff. And are most of the things you're going to be doing kind of a smaller batch thing? Like, I mean, I don't know if there's a ballpark number of like bottles you foresee for each of your things coming along, but...
Small batch, we talked about this. We talked about on the bottle, we're going to actually hand number the bottles.
Oh, nice.
And each bottle that you buy, you might come in and you might have vodka batch number 52, and you come back 6 weeks later and it's vodka batch 105, and it's just a little bit different, or maybe it's exactly the same. We don't know.
Right. You'll be tasting and seeing.
So but I think the key is that we want to keep it sort of small batch, especially with the barrel aged product, rather than taking a whole bunch of barrels and blending to sort of one denominator, saying this is our whiskey, we blend from all these different barrels, and this is what we get. Instead, we're going to say, this barrel has this barrel's character.
Right.
If you come in and buy a bottle of whiskey from this barrel, it's going to be really exciting because it's only from that barrel. So
the next barrel will be a different
thing.
The
next barrel. And it could be a barrel from the same cooper, but every barrel's a little different. And that's what some of the people who are really famous bourbon blenders and stuff, that's what they're really good at. And man, I have no idea how they do it. They can take, you know, 650 different barrels that all taste a little bit different and not just throw it all into a batch and say, this is what we've got, but actually take those to come up with a bourbon which tastes the same year after year, even though they're using barrels from different trees and that have been in different parts of the barrel of the cooperage and the stack. So those guys are amazing. And I can't do that. So I think it's a really cool thing to just taste each barrel and say, you know, it's like different crops of chilies.
Right. Yeah. Right. You're going to have a little different thing.
And the best thing about that is with having the package agency, we can sell there out of the store, and we can get an idea if something's a big hit and then look at it on a bigger scale.
Okay.
So that's the nice part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the cool thing about distilleries is that the way you expand is you add more stills.
So add the machinery and lets you play a little more.
Yeah, and it's not even really a machine, right? It's a big pot,
right?
Right, and it's got a collector on the other end. So if we do find something that really hits, like let's say we make a whiskey and everybody really loves our whiskey and we want to sell our whiskey in 5 states.
Yeah.
Well, then we can buy a great big still, which is really good for making whiskey.
Okay.
Or really good for making gin or whatever it is. And that's the beauty of having this little hybrid still.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm really excited about the still.
Yeah, that's great. You mentioned a little bit the licensing part. I mean, what were some of the other challenges in terms of just getting this thing off the ground?
There are so many challenges. There's not much out there to learn about distilling. And so it was a lot of going out and hitting the road and working with people that own distilleries and saying, hey, how do you do this and how do you do that? That was a big hurdle, actually. Some people say it's a lot easier to grow green stuff than to make alcohol because you can find out a lot more about that on the internet. But it was a very positive thing because I've been to over 100 distilleries.
Oh, wow.
Just, you know, looking at different processes. And there's so many different ways that you can come about making a good whiskey.
So. Yeah, it definitely seems like the boutique distillery has blossomed in the last like 10 years or so, where you see them popping up in lots of different towns, and we're ripe for that, hopefully.
Yeah, they're over in Colorado. I want to say that there are 35 to 40 distilleries right now.
Holy cow.
New York is the real hotbed because they changed their laws to allow craft distilleries sort of on a more of a wholesale basis, and I think there's over 150 in New York State now, and it's really, most of it's been in the last 2 years. When we started distilling in North Carolina in 2 years ago, it was 6 or 8, and now I know of at least 3 that are opening in Durham, and and that's just one place.
It's an arms race.
Yeah.
Well, it really is, and I know of about 12 that are opening just in that one state in the next year.
Oh, cow.
Now, I don't think that there are 12 opening up in Utah. No,
yeah, I don't think so. What was it about, Salt Lake City in particular? You know, we do have High West in Park City. We have Ogden doing the Underground and the Five Wives Vodka. And we have a couple wineries and stuff. But did you always want it to be in Salt Lake area, or did you just kind of poke around and find a good spot?
I mean, that's kind of interesting because I grew up here in Salt Lake. I was living down in Dallas, Texas, and that's actually when I was doing a lot of the scouting of other distilleries and stuff. But Utah is intriguing. Going back to making a local product, a great local product. I mean, we have great weather. You know, they talk about in Kentucky about how the barrels open the pores and close the pores in the winter and the summertime. And we have a lot of that same, temperature swings here to get some of that flavor out of the barrels. And, you know, once again, ingredients. We have great byproducts to make some great whiskey. So
that's awesome.
I think there's a good market here too, because this is sort of unexplored territory. Yeah. Well, it's not unexplored, but I mean, we're talking 2 distilleries and 2 opening for the whole state.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not for the whole county, for the whole state.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a significant population that is going to be interested in trying relatively local product.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the exciting thing about it. It's new.
Absolutely. And we have a growing kind of urban sensibility in Salt Lake proper, and we've become more and more of a food and drink town over the last few years.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
You're hitting right in there for sure.
Yeah.
So what's the first thing people will be able to kind of do as a customer, as somebody who wants to check you out? I mean, what happens in January that kind of...
Well, we're hoping, I don't know about January, but probably February, we're hoping to do some tours.
Okay.
We want to do some bottling parties to where people actually come down and bottle our product. And back east, or a lot of the distilleries, they give you a bottle for coming down and doing that. We may have to give a t-shirt or a shot glass or something else. But we're going to figure out something fun to do, to get people to be able to come be a part of the experience. So
gift certificates.
Come back and visit us again sometime. Well, for more information, you can go on to facebook.com/sugarhousedistillery. James Fowler, Dan Feldman, thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Good luck with the distillery. Can't wait to taste it.
Woohoo.
You probably recognize the name of the Utah County Swillers for their many, many live shows that seem to happen on an almost weekly basis around here. The Trucker Punk Band originally formed back in 2007 and quickly released their debut full-length album called Polygamist in the summer of 2008. They haven't put out a new full-length album since then, but they've been on plenty of compilations and they are constantly out there playing live, as I mentioned. Here's a song called Liquor Store from that 2008 album, Polygamist. More information on the band, visit them online at facebook.com/the Utah County Swillers. This is your weekly daily calendar for the week beginning on Tuesday, January 14th, running through the 20th. And yes, that includes the start of those crazy film festivals, people. So keep your ear to the ground. There's always new shows popping up. And you'll want to be sure to go to slugmag.com every day and check out the new listings going on there. As I looked at the calendar, I found all kinds of goodies, starting with the Front Bottoms, Indie Rockers, one of my favorite new bands that I just heard last year for the first time. They're playing at Club Sound on Tuesday, January 14th. Same night, Waka Flocka Flame leads off a big hip-hop show at the Urban Lounge that also includes Concise Kilgore and DJ Juggy. That should be a real good one. Wednesday, January 15th, if you're in Utah, you know ska is still huge, and Real Big Fish are coming through to headline at the Murray Theater. They're being joined by suburban legends Mighty Mongo and the Maxis. That should be a really good time as well. Thursday, January 16th, one of my old favorites, Matt Pryor, lead singer of the Get Up Kids. He's headlining a solo show at Kilby Court. He's put out some fine solo material over the years. Definitely has a little bit of that Get Up Kids vibe, but a little bit different, a little more singer-songwriter, but really good stuff. Friday, January 17th, Sundance and Slamdance are in full effect. You want to see what's going on up in Park City and down here in Salt Lake City, check it out online. Also that night, Nitro Circus is coming to Energy Solutions Arena. Be sure to pick up the January issue of Slug Mag, read all about that show. Also, over at Kilby Court on Friday the 17th, MERS leads another great hip-hop bill with Jobby, Marley B, and Cash Lansky also on tap. Saturday, January 18th, Joshua James, Utah County's finest, coming up and playing the Urban Lounge. And then Monday, January 20th, and if you're more into just straight up rock and roll, head over to Max Payne and the Groovies, playing with Dark Seas, Breakers, and the Super 78s at the Urban Lounge on that Monday, January 20th. That's Martin Luther King Day, so you have the day off, pregame. All right, that's your weekly daily calendar for the week of January 14th. As always, slugmag.com for lots more listings, and you can add listings for your own events. For a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add some quality content to your links as well. Thunderfist is another band that you've probably seen the name out there a whole lot. They play shows seemingly constantly. They've had lots of lineup changes through the years. The six-piece group has put out 5 full-length albums. Lots of really great stuff in here. They originally started in 98, so we're talking about a band with a 15-year career in their background. They included a live album they recorded at Burt's Tiki Lounge. That's one of my personal favorites. Their most recent album is a self-titled one that was released just in February of 2012. Here's a song from that one called Hit the Bottle Again. For more info on Thunderfist, visit them online at facebook.com/ThunderfistSLC. We are happy to welcome Trace Hegeman and Jason Lacates from Whiskey Street. You guys are the co-owners. First of all, thanks so much for coming into our little studio here to chat about the place.
You bet. Yeah, thanks for having us.
For people who don't know, Whiskey Street is a brand new bar located at 323 South Main Street in downtown Salt Lake City. You guys are both owners of Bourbon House as well. Well, why don't we just start with the kind of, what is the genesis of the idea of having another bar, a place called Whiskey Street? Where did that come from?
The name behind the Whiskey Street came from Brigham Young back when.
Of course.
Yeah.
everything came from Brigham Young.
When the when Salt Lake started to get, you know, other people coming here other than the Mormons, the area on Main Street didn't have a name. I mean, between 2nd South and 4th South was where the saloons and the billiards bar and the bars and whatnots were starting to pop up. So Brigham Young designated that Whiskey Street, the place for the Gentiles to spend their time. So that's how we came up with the name.
Nice. Obviously, you guys have been in business with Bourbon House for a little while now. What was it? Did you want to have kind of a bar with a little bit of a different vibe? I mean, what's the idea, I guess, behind the place itself?
Yeah, we you know, when we did Whiskey Street, we definitely didn't want to compete very much with ourselves. Bourbon House is kind of turned into a younger demographic. You know, we're down in the basement, we're not street level. When we originally did Bourbon House, we actually looked at the space that houses Whiskey House and almost had a deal done with the landlord, and then it ended up falling apart when we did Bourbon House. And then the tenant that did end up going in failed. We took a look at it and made a deal and built the place out.
Okay. And so it sounds like, I mean, is the idea to have not necessarily a repeat of the kind of the young vibe of the other place, but a more, what, mature, a little more upscale, or
a little more upscale, a little more food-driven, okay. You know, chef-oriented. The kitchen at Bourbon House has its challenges because of the size. Whiskey Street has a larger kitchen. We were able to put out fresh-made food. You know, it's just been a lot easier with a larger kitchen.
Now, I'm trying to remember, I was in Whiskey Street about a week ago, and what's striking to me, and this happens a lot of kind of those older spaces in downtown, is you walk in the door of what looks like a relatively small front, and then it just stretches what seems like forever out the back, in a good way. It doesn't feel too big, but, and you're sharing that same back alley with like Eva and those things, so it's not that crazy big, but it definitely has that feel. And what was it, was like the CO2 place or something, like a soda shop or something before you guys that lasted like 5 minutes?
I
don't know much about it because I've only met two people that ever been.
Yeah, I know it didn't last very long. What was the space before that? Do you remember when you guys were first looking at it when you did Bourbon House? Was it just an empty?
It was AJ's Desert Ed
Lounge. Oh, okay.
I remember going there when I was like 21. I think it closed in the 90s, didn't it?
Yeah, it sat for quite a while then.
Trace loves dive bars, and he said it was even too divey for him.
It was pretty divey. I remember that. I definitely remember
when we looked at the space, when we were looking, you know, to do Bourbon House, there was pigeons living in the building.
It was a shithole.
You know, in terms of the difference in, say, the food, how would you describe it from, say, Bourbon House to what Whiskey Street has?
More gastropub, even a little step above. Bourbon House is more comfort food, more bar food. Not that Bourbon House's food was a second thought, but we want the food at Whiskey Street to drive sales as well, and not just be, it's a bar, oh yeah, and they have food. We want to be a bar.
A place people go to eat, and, right, okay. Have you found, I mean, you've only been open at, what, about a month or two maybe in there?
Yeah,
I mean,
a little over a month.
What are some of the things that people are, you know, naturally attracted to that you notice when you look at the end of the night, everyone's ordering X? You know, is there anything like that that's really jumped out off the menu yet?
It's been the craft cocktails for the most part. You know, that's trending across the country, cocktails with a little love put into them.
Sure.
We also, you know, we have about over 200 beers, so it's been neat to see some of the, you know, really not so popular beers going. You know, there's something for everyone. You know, so if someone ever walks in and says, oh, you don't have, you know, it's like,
yeah,
we have, you know, 500 different options as far as what you
is it drink. The same with the liquor too? I mean, is it a significantly larger, I guess, menu than what you had at Bourbon House?
It's hands down the largest liquor collection in Utah. It's we'd do more at Bourbon House if we had the room. We just simply don't have the room. That was the vision with Trace and I is and it always has been a beautiful back bar.
Yeah.
And we did that as best as we could at Bourbon House with the space. And then
the back bar is Jason.
Yeah.
He designed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was
don't be all
stuff.
Modest.
at Whiskey Street.
Yeah, that was his vision.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's really beautiful.
It turned out fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean.
What were some of the, you know, challenges? You know, obviously liquor laws are always a challenge, but what are some of the other challenges of just opening a new space in Salt Lake City in 2000? It was, you know, end of 2013.
Liquor laws. That is actually the license that we got in line for originally for Bourbon House.
Oh,
so,
really?
What was that, 3 years ago?
Yeah, we finally got a liquor license. It took me 34 months to finally get a liquor license in my name in Bourbon House. We had made a deal with the owner of Green Street when he shut Green Street down.
Right.
He's actually a partner in both properties.
Oh, okay.
And then with the intention of relocating Green Street. And so about 4 or 5 months ago, I finally got a liquor license in my name after seriously going every month for 34 months.
Oh.
And got that, and then we took the Green Street license and moved it down the street. So the Whiskey Street's actually operating on the former Green Street.
Okay. And how long ago would you say that Whiskey Street was like an idea that you had in motion that you guys have been working on? I mean, how much lead up do we have to opening day?
When did we sign the lease? And was it April?
April.
We signed the lease in April, so it took us
about almost a year to find a place.
Get that set up.
That had
you have to have that before the license even, right, or whatever. Yeah.
So, you know, we're just paying rent.
Yeah.
And we didn't start remodeling or doing anything because you just don't, if you're going to get a license. We had an out in our lease. Ugh. It just wasn't going to happen.
So, yeah, we didn't even have the key to the building. We were paying the rent, but didn't even have the key because we didn't know, you know, if for some reason the Liquor Commission decided that we didn't look favorable of us in getting a license, you know.
Yeah, you can't sit there forever paying rent.
Yeah. So we had an out in our lease. If we didn't get one in X amount of time, we could walk away, but luckily things worked out.
Okay. And you guys opened in what, November or so? Or was
November
it?
21st.
Okay, right for the holidays and everything. Yeah. It's probably been nuts through all that, I'm sure. Definitely. Well, excellent. People, for more information, you can go to whiskeystreet.com. Way to get a good URL. That's a good score, I must say. I'm surprised it was out there.
Or bestbarinsaltlake.com.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hey, there you go. Nice way to squat on a couple. Well, Trace and Jason, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it. And again, Whiskey Street is located at 323 South Main Street in downtown Salt Lake City. WhiskeyStreet.com. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to Slug Soundwaves. And for all things Slug Magazine, visit us at slugmag.com. Sundance and Slam Dance, as we mentioned, just around the corner, and Slug is gearing up to cover them like we always do. We'd like to know what films you're looking forward to seeing this year at the festivals. Send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or hit us up through social media on Twitter at Slug Soundwaves or via Facebook at facebook.com/slugsoundwaves. We just might bring up your suggestion on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. Executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. Main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and technical design is by Kate Colgan. Be sure to tune us in again next week when we'll be talking to Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp, Utah about all the great sushi on the Wasatch Front. And Mike Riedel will be in to share the latest local beer news. Thanks for listening.